Hello, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of Unlock Your Life. And this is an episode in the series, The Money Interviews. And today we are interviewing Alan Kleinhans. And Alan and I met at a T. Harv Eker seminar. And Alan is a very special person. He is originally from South Africa, and he has his own training and coaching and international speaking business. And he also shares the stage with Tony Robbins, and he is one of the leading speakers for Tony. And he's done so many things in life, and I will let him tell all that story. But for me, it's really special to be interviewing this specific person on our journey because he is such a huge inspiration to thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the world, and also to me. So thank you very much, Alan, for being here and sharing your time with me, because I know how valuable your time is, and I really appreciate that very much.
You're welcome, my friend. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad. So the first question, and that's actually a question I would like you to introduce yourself with, and you can tell a lot more about yourself. The first question I have for you is, so we're talking about money harmony.
Yes, money harmony. I like it. Great subject.
I love the term harmony because I hear so many people talk about freedom, but there are so many ways of freedom and so many things that you can be free in or not free in. But having harmony around money really makes you free.
Yes.
A lot of our listeners struggle with the thing. They're in that place where they want to build a business, but they don't want to sacrifice their relationship or their kids, or they don't want to sacrifice their business for their family.
Yeah.
And they feel stuck in that either or place. And I know that you are not in that place now, but you have been in a lot of either or places. I know that.
Yes.
What is the specific incident that started your journey towards harmony or towards freedom?
Before I start, though, are you on a farm?
No, I have a rooster next to my... I'm not on a farm, but...
I can hear the rooster there. It's awesome. It reminds me of South Africa.
Ah, great.
So I've obviously lots of memories of farms and outdoor living and roosters and animals, etc. And I just thought, I can hear a rooster in the background. It's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
What started my my journey? I suppose the answer to that question, because there's different answers to that question. What started my journey into personal development was the fact that I was introduced to Think and Grow Rich 6 months after I'd come out of the army. I was a soldier in South Africa, and I'd spent 2 years as a soldier in South Africa, and I was trained and sent on different operations. And when I returned back home after my 2 years, the last 7 months of my time in the army, I spent in Angola during the height of the civil war there.
Wow.
And on a top secret operation, 6,000 troops. I was one of those troops. And we were at war for 7 months, or we were involved in the civil war that was taking place there. And it was obviously a really rough time, and I saw some terrible things and lost a lot of friends, did some terrible things. And then I came home and I was trying to process that, and didn't realize that I had post-traumatic stress at the time, but obviously dawned on me later because my behavior was so erratic, and I was having severe mood swings, and I was drinking a lot. It wasn't helping. But 6 months after I came home, my saving grace was that I was introduced to Think and Grow Rich, the book. My friend, who was also a soldier in the same operation, he introduced me to Think and Grow Rich, and he said, you must read this book. And that was my very first introduction into personal development. And I was hooked from the moment I started reading the book. I loved it. And then he encouraged me to read other books. So the first three books I ever read on the subject of personal development was Think and Grow Rich, Mind Power by John Kehoe,
yeah,
and You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay.
And
after reading those three books, I was hooked, on this and psychology, which I'd never ever come across before in my life. I'd never heard anything about this before. And I never knew what I wanted to do with my life. I wasn't a good student at school. I wasn't academically minded. I was a bit of a rebel from the earliest age. I had very low self-esteem as a youngster. I was bullied a lot. I grew up in a tough neighborhood. I grew up next to a police station for the first 6 years of my life. From the time I was born till I was six, I lived next door to a police station in South Africa in a place called Durban. Point Road police station.
Police station in South Africa is quite a different place than the police station in the Netherlands or in the UK, I bet.
Well, especially in 1966, you know, yes, through to 72. So yes, it was a very different place then. So I had a very interesting education in the police yard next door because I was very curious. Around the age of 4 or 5 years of age, I used to be very curious and curious enough to climb onto the wall and look into the yard next door and and watch from a vantage point that no one knew existed there and watch what was happening next door, which was brutal and horrific, you know?
Yes. That was in the middle of apartheid, right? Just for our listeners who are not aware of it, that was the middle of apartheid.
Yeah, bang in the middle, and a very different country to what it is now. Obviously, they've still got their unique challenges there. There's still racial tensions there, and there's the difference is now that it's different. It's black on black, black on Indian, black on colored, black on white, white on. It's a melting pot of different cultures there. It's a beautiful country, but they've still got challenges. But it was a different place, you know, South Africa back then. And so by the time I was 21, I was and I was 6 months out of the army. My paradigm was very destructive. I had a destructive and a very self-destructive paradigm. I had already started to dabble and smoke marijuana, dabble in drugs from a young age, just so that I could fit in, because I thought it was cool. I didn't have a great relationship with my parents, especially my dad. I craved my father's love, and he was a very strict man and very disciplined. He was a disciplinarian and sent me to boarding school, and it was very, you know, he was doing the best he could because he wanted me to have a great education. But in terms of an emotional relationship, yeah, we didn't really have a very good relationship until I was much older, you know, and I began to, once I started to, you know, read the books I was reading and get into personal development, I started to see, you know, have new insights, etc. And that's when I began to heal my relationship with my father, which was a fantastic moment in my life, which is a turning point for me, which came in 1994, actually, 4 years after I left South Africa. In 1990, I decided to come and live in England.
Yeah.
And in 94, my father and I, we began to heal our rift. And that was a great turning point in my life. And then while living in London, I was exposing myself to lots of different teachings and lots of different philosophies of thought and, you know, psychology and personal development and going to workshops and talks, etc. But it wasn't until 1999 that I really had a significant shift in my life when I attended my first Tony Robbins workshop.
Okay.
I had been listening to Tony on cassette tape since 1990 from the time I arrived in London. It was the first book I bought in London was Unlimited Power by Tony, and I bought 2 cassette tapes. And right through the 90s, I listened to his voice over and over on cassette. In 94, I got involved in the Landmark Forum, Landmark Education. I did all of the curriculum for Landmark. And I even helped to establish the very first Landmark program in South Africa in 98. But as I said, it wasn't until 1999 that I actually arrived, you know, at my first Tony Robbins workshop live, and I had a significant shift in my thinking, a significant shift in my psychology and my emotions at that event, which really helped me to turn my life around in a very, you know, in a very powerful way, really. And from that moment, my life is, I've had some challenges still since then around money, and, you know, I built a very successful business thereafter, and yeah, and then I lost everything again, and then I had to start from scratch again, and that's happened to me twice. But the last 17, 18 years since that workshop, life has been fantastic, really. It's been amazing, you know. And now life is it's brilliant, you know. Business is booming. I'm traveling all around the world, and I'm coaching people from around the world, and our life is amazing, you know. So it's taken me a little while to get some kind of harmony, you know. I've had, you know, and I think it's the same for all people, really. You know, anyone who's listening to this, you know, I think I always say to people that you must remember that life is about challenges and tests and lessons, and we all have our own unique lessons, and we all have our own unique painful experiences. Yeah. But those are all, it's all about, you know, understanding, you know, what the bigger picture, really, you know, and you have to find your own way to your own, you know, your own, what's the word? Enlightened paradigm about how your life works and your place in the world, that, really.
Yeah, I love that word. And the thing is, I hear a lot of people asking me about why should I worry about money? Why do you always need more? And for me, the answer is, at this point in my life, I'm not sure if we need more, but diving into our money patterns make us grow as humans, because these are the patterns that tend to be so stuck that you cannot grow into the person you want to become if they keep on lingering down somewhere. And yeah. And one of the things that I am really annoyed by is on Facebook, on the internet, is so many people talking about where they're now, where they used to be, and that it's worth the journey. Well, that's fine. But what happened on that journey? So that's what I really want to pull from you as much as possible. And that, so what has been your biggest mistake? Because people can relate to where you went wrong and not to where you're now, I think, more.
Yeah.
So what has been your biggest mistake when it comes to money harmony? Where did you fall short?
I think for me, and you know, it's a good point you make about money, you know, because money, people say money is not everything. But however, you know, Zig Ziglar, the great Zig Ziglar that many people probably familiar with his name, he used to say always, you know, money's not everything, but it's right up there with oxygen.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just need it. You need oxygen to live. And it's the same with the world that we've created over the last 1,000 years, you know. It's a world that you know, it works on trade, and money is the way that we measure that. And so we just have to get that handled. But I think why it brings up a lot of issues for people is because it's all about worth, really. And when people build a business for the first time in their life, they're not really sure about how to make that happen. They're learning, et cetera. And then it's, you know, there's lots of things that come into play. But I know when I built my business, and, you know, I've been selling since I was a young kid, I love sales. But when I, you know, first built my first proper business, I had to have the same, you know, I had the same kinds of challenges because I had to learn different things about business and especially around, you know, and because I was still working on myself at the time. And my initial goal was, my mission, my belief system was, if I had money, people would love me, you know. If I had money, I would be accepted. Because when I was young, I used to hear all kinds of things around money. But because I had low self-esteem, and my parents were always reminding me when I was young that you can't afford it, we can't afford it, we can't afford it, you know. And your schooling is costing a fortune. It's expensive to go to that school. You know, please make sure you get a good education so you can get it to university. So, you know, you can get a good job. And, you know, so I was always being reminded we didn't have a lot of money and that my schooling was costing a fortune. And then I wasn't a really academic. And so I thought, well, once I make money, and my own motivation when I was young was always like, I'll make money. You know, when I make money, then people will accept me. I'll be more acceptable. I'll be more lovable. And then I built this amazing business in South Africa, you know, a training business where I was doing a lot of corporate training in banks and big organizations and some of the biggest brands in the world, sales training, leadership training. And I was speaking and I was doing some coaching. This was after I went through the whole of the Robbins curriculum, the leadership thing. And I went back to South Africa for 7 years and I built a great business. It was awesome. And I made loads of money. I became a millionaire in South African rands. I was living a millionaire lifestyle in South Africa, a beautiful house overlooking the sea. You know, it was lovely. But I still had the false premise that because I had money, I was more acceptable and more lovable. And then and then I had the money and I was still unhappy. You know, I thought, well, you know, I got the money, but there's something still not, you know, it's still, and there was in the back of my mind too, I had this thing about, you know, when is the other shoe going to drop? When are they going to find out that I'm a fraud? When are they going to find out that actually, you know, I got an E for enough at school? You know, when are they going to find out that I don't, you know, I'm just a self-taught practical psychologist? You know, I'm not a psychologist, but I'm a practical psychologist.
Exactly. And harmony comes in.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the deserving, you know, it's the deserving and the self-worth and really feeling like you have something to add, some value. And although I knew I had value to add and I was very good at what I did, there was still this thing in the background, like, gosh, they're paying me so much money. Am I worthy of this money? You know? And so then it got to the point where 7 years later, I lost everything, you know, and I was back on the street, literally, where I had to sleep in Euston Station in London because I had nowhere to sleep.
Well, it's not that bad even. So you got to the point where, with no house.
Well, I walked out of my house in Kent, and I left my wife at the time, who's my ex-wife now. I left my two children, and because I felt so, I felt like such a failure at the time, and I'd made some bad decisions. I got into business with the wrong people, and it reflected badly on me, and that was like a domino effect. And before I knew it, I just imploded, really. I lost everything. And I had to start from scratch again. But it was a great gift, though, because the greatest gift that that was the fact that money doesn't make me happy. And I had to learn how to be happy with nothing, really.
Because that there is love, even if you don't have money.
Yeah, exactly. So what I did that night, sitting in New Sensation, I remember having a conversation with myself, and I began to chuckle about my journey. I thought, wow, look at my life before UPW, before my first workshop with Tony, where I arrived at that workshop, you know, with a head full of knowledge, you know, years of study, 12 years of education in terms of psychology, human behavior, but still suicidal, still emotionally broke, financially broke, in debt, sleeping on someone's couch, you know, and a drug addict at the time in 99. And then 4 years later, building this amazing business, you know, working with some of the most successful rugby players in the world, you know, some Springbok rugby players, you know, working with some of the biggest brands, making, you know, millions, and having a fantastic business for 7 years. And then, you know, 6 years after that, you know, or 4 years after that, I'm sitting in Houston Station and I've got nothing, not even £1 to buy myself a cup of tea. And I began to laugh about the whole experience. But that's when it hit me. I realized, you know what, I actually have to learn how to become happy with no money. It's all about just being happy with who you are and what you've got, and really looking at the gifts rather than focusing on what's missing.
Exactly. Yeah. So that I think, so if I asked you what your definition of financial harmony would be, I think that would be it, right?
Financial harmony is about realizing that your self-worth is not your net worth. The two are unrelated. You know,
nothing.
And there's so many people who, without even being conscious of it, they have those two that are overlapped. You know, they believe that their self-worth is directly related to their net worth. And that's not true, because, you know, it's financial harmony is about realizing that really, I think what it is that when you realize that you actually have some real value and you can heal your past and heal your heart. Heal your past mistakes, forgive yourself, forgive people, anyone in your life that you feel incomplete with. Really, you know, look at things from a new perspective and say, well, you know what? Everything is always on the way. Nothing's in the way. There's been no accidents. Everything has happened perfectly in order to create the person I am now. And I have this amazing experience and knowledge to share with the world. And not focus on how much it's going to make you. Just really focus on how you can serve. Then what happens is then the universe will start blessing you with riches, you know, in all kinds of ways.
Yes. Yeah, that's my experience too. So what happened after Houston Station?
After Houston Station, what I did was I just I had to go and find, I went to stay with a friend, eventually plucked up enough courage to step through my pride and pick up the phone and say, listen, I need some help. I need somewhere to stay. And then I started from scratch again. You know, I just began to do the basics again, started practicing gratitude every morning for what I did have, and training my mind to focus on what was available instead of what was missing. And my mind was so incessantly obsessed with focusing on what I had lost. And I was giving myself a hard time for a long time, you know. And every time I kept saying, what can I learn from this experience? My brain said, nothing, you idiot, because you've messed it all up. You know, you had a fantastic life, you know, two beautiful kids, a good marriage, a great business, and you've lost everything, you know. But I just kept bringing my mind back to, you know, okay, what can I learn from this experience? How can I use this experience to grow? How can I use this experience to teach other people? Or how can I share this experience with other people that it serves them? And how can I be grateful for what I'm experiencing right now? And I just kept bringing myself back to that. And then over a period of time, I just, you know, started to rebuild, really. For a while, I won't lie, though. I must tell people, anyone who's listening, financial ruin is a very painful thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. To be on the verge of bankruptcy where, you know, where the people around you are saying, you know, declare, it's a better thing to declare bankruptcy. And I nearly did, but there was a part of me that said, no, you know, I can turn it around. But for a while I climbed into a hole and I licked my wounds for a while because I was in a lot of pain. But eventually I just thought, you know what? Okay. It's time to get back on the horse, you know, and it's time to get back into a thing, because as a speaker and a trainer and as a Tony Robbins trainer, or being in the Tony Robbins leadership environment for so long, I've been with Tony now for 18 years.
Yeah.
You know, the standard, you know, you encourage your standards, it's a very high standard of operation. But then, you know, because of the mistakes I made, I was giving myself such a hard time and I was thinking, you know, I'm not worthy. of being on a stage, you know, until I sort my shit out, really. Excuse my French, but until I sort my life out, you know, and so I took myself out of the speaking game for a little while, for about 2 years. And I just, for a while, I just, you know, processed what had happened, you know, and I did the mental exercises, and I reread the books, and I did the writing, and I just processed, and I slowly began to just, you know, form, you know, some new questions around the experience and to form some new perceptions of it. And then I just began to ask myself, you know, what can I, you know, how can I learn from this experience, and what can I use this? How can I use this experience? That was a great question, because then I thought the answer eventually came one day. My brain said, what a story this will make one day.
Absolutely. Right?
And then I began to laugh, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, yeah, one day this is going to make an amazing story. And for the last 4 years now, I think, you know, or 4 or 5 years, you know, where life is now, I'm back on track. You know, the last 5 years have been amazing. I mean, last year was an incredible year. This year has been unbelievable. I've been traveling nonstop this year, sharing my message all around the world. And I'm now at that place where that's a great story. You know, when I tell that story from the stage, and then people who are going through their own financial challenges or going through their own challenges around self-worth, they get a lot of value out of it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing this, because specifically the point where you beat yourself up so many times that you, I know for a fact that you have been in the place where you don't think you deserve to live anymore. And that's a place that so many listeners can relate to, because that is what it feels like when you're all by yourself in your bed overthinking what's happened.
It does. Yeah. It's a horrible place to be. Yeah. There's nothing worse than feeling alone and feeling like, you know, no one's going to miss me. You know, if I end it all, nothing, no one's going to miss me. The pain's going to be over, you know? Any of the listeners who are going through any financial challenge now, I would love to stress, there's always somebody there who will help you. You just have to be willing enough to reach out, or courageous enough to reach out and say, hey, I need some help, you know? Even if it's just to bounce something off somebody, you need a listening ear, or there's always a different perspective. And these kinds of experiences, they always create value in the long term. They always add massive value to the people who are going through them. It's a tremendous experience. It's not an experience you want to have again. It's not an experience you want to wish on anybody. Experience is very powerful, you know?
And what is possible if you go through that? Because the threshold on putting yourself in that can really be a difficult one to cross. So what is the life that's behind the threshold? Why would you even think of doing that ritual of every single day, pushing yourself towards the gratitude again and dimming all those voices? What's possible?
Amazing things are possible when you get to the other side of that, and your perception changes. And I think ultimately what you learn, and all my own experience, you know, and I've had a number of significant experiences, significant emotional events where I've been on the brink, you know. I mean, you know, when I was at war, you know, 7 months, my friends were getting killed on either side of me. I've had experiences where I've been in car accidents. You know, I've had experiences where I've indulged in things that I shouldn't have indulged in. And I've had some tough financial challenges and challenges around relationships. We all have our own experiences, but I think ultimately what these things have taught me is that any problem is surmountable, you know? And then what happens is, sorry, someone just knocked at the door here.
That's okay.
Hold on a second. I'll be back. 1 second.
Yeah.
Amy, shush.
Thanks very much.
It's the postman dropping off something and the dog going crazy. So I mean, ultimately what it's taught me is that there's nothing stronger than the human spirit.
Yeah.
There's nothing bigger than the human spirit. There's nothing as formidable as, you know, the human ability or the spiritual ability to succumb and also to overcome, right? Any challenge, to surmount any challenge. And when you really, you know, when you build that certainty, for me, what it's given me is it's given me a tremendous amount of certainty and a tremendous amount of self-belief. And whatever life throws at me, you know, I've developed this ability to look at it and say, okay, what's the, you know, what's actually happening? What's the worst that can happen? And what's the gift in this experience? There's always a gift, you know. There's always a gift, and I tell people all the time, you know, everything's on the way. Nothing's ever in the way. We believe that things are in the way because of the experiences we've had in our past, the painful experiences. So what our mind teaches us is that there's certain things that we must avoid, and what we then, and the problem with that is you never really get to live a fully self-expressed life. No, so, so it's about realizing that, you know what, everything is a gift. Everything. Every challenge,
single thing, yeah.
Every painful experience is any gift. It's all a gift. Everything that's caused you pain has always been a gift. Also, if you can look at it from a different perspective, you know, and it makes you stronger spiritually. It makes you stronger spiritually, and I think ultimately, you know, the bigger your mission or the bigger your goals or the more ambitious you are, then you're going to encounter other challenges on your path. You're going to encounter a better quality of challenge as you grow, a better quality of problem. But you also have to develop a different, you know, consciousness in order to deal with the problems that are coming as your life grows. And you can't do that by, you know, you can't do it unless you have these little steps on the way where you learn and you learn and you learn and you learn and you overcome pain and your consciousness expands, you know? That's the only way to do it.
That's true. Nobody was born the Tony Robbins in front of 10,000 people. Even Tony Robbins wasn't born that way. No. Somehow there is always a journey. And what I would really love to hear from you as kind of a last thing is, what the one thing before the last question is, do you still have all those negative thoughts and all those, because that's one of the things that I know a lot of our listeners are worrying about. Yeah, but why would I even bother making this journey, because it will never change anyway inside me? And has it changed inside of you? Are you now in the place that you wake up grateful?
That's a great question. What I tell people is that when you are stressed, your old voice, sometimes the old voice comes back a lot stronger when you stress. It's when you at your times of, it's when you really push to the limit, that it's what you ask yourself at those moments. It's what the voice says at those moments that's important to really be aware of. I tell people that, you know, sometimes the voices never go away, right? The ego mind or the monkey mind, sometimes those negative thoughts are never really go away. But what happens is if you do the exercises, then what you do is you develop a resilience to that voice. And that's what it's really about. It's developing a strong resilience to the negative thoughts, where in the past, when you're stressed and you have a negative thought and you think, okay, well, let me have a drink, then you might do that. But once you've done the exercises enough times and you've developed the muscle, then when the voice says, hey, let me have a drink, then you say, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, let me meditate, or let me go and exercise, or let me go for a run. Let me do some writing, you know, let me do some journaling, because then you can clear your mind and you can open up for new inspiration. So it's developing the muscle and doing the exercises every single day that allows you to really be resilient, or to develop a resilience to any negative thoughts that will come from your monkey mind. And that's what most people don't do. They don't do the exercises enough, so they don't develop the strength or the discipline.
Well, they hope to come to a place where they don't need the exercises anymore. And that's an irrelevant question. There is never a place where you won't need the exercises anymore.
No.
Like there is never a place in your physical body where you won't need food anymore.
It's like my friend Joseph McClendon says. Joseph McClendon, who's Tony's number one trainer and best friend, etc. They've been together for 30 years. And, you know, I've had some great training from Joseph. He's an amazing man. If anybody ever gets a chance to listen to him or see him live, he's brilliant. But he always says the training never stops.
Yeah.
You know, the training never stops. And it's true. If you look at athletes, you know, world-class athletes, so you look at, you know, they never stop the training. You know, even when they retire, they still do some training. You know, they're doing training because they want to stay in shape. They want to keep in shape. And what's interesting is those who do stop training after their retirement, their physicality changes very rapidly, you know, and then before you see they suddenly not so fit anymore. So you have to continue. It's the same with the mind. The mental training is far more important than the physical training, because the mental training allows you to actually continue with the physical training, you know. Without the mental discipline, you won't get in the gym every day. You know, without the mental discipline, you won't get up in the morning and do what you need to do, you know, in order to stay fit, healthy.
That's true.
Yeah. It's the same with money. It's the same with money.
Exactly the same with money. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing. And I always say you can use those negative voices as a compass, not as something you want to lose, but as a compass. Like, oh, what are you telling me? Oh, you're telling me that I need to meditate now. Thank you.
Yeah. For telling me that. Very good. That's there. Yeah, that's brilliant. I love that. It reminds me of what Tony says about this. If you look at disempowering emotions, any emotions that are disempowering, you know, like anger, frustration, overwhelm, you know, depression, whatever, he says those are really action signals. Whenever you're feeling like that, then it's a good action signal. You got to say, oh, why am I feeling like this? What am I focusing on? And what do I need to focus on in order to feel better right now? Because exactly. That's the only way you create a new result, really.
It's the best GPS we have. We just haven't learned how to use it.
Yeah. And Esther Hicks says exactly the same thing about your emotions. You know, she says your emotions are a compass, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's beautiful. So the last question would be, if anybody who's listening to this, what would you recommend them to do directly after they press stop on their device or whatever they're listening on, directly after this interview? What is the first thing that they can do immediately? Because listening to this, I know that for that, I've been reading books over 42 years now, but the first 20 years, I just read them. Mm. And then I started to do things with it. Mm. But what's the first step? Today,
the first, it's a great question. I love that question. The first step that people can do as soon as they finish listening to this is pull out a pad of paper and a pen,
yeah,
and write down what it is they want to create in their life with absolute detail. And then also after that, to write down what they believe they need to heal in their life, what they believe is incomplete, right? In terms of maybe a relationship with their parents or one of their parents or a sibling or somebody, maybe a past divorce or somebody that is died or passed on or who's not here anymore that they can't talk to anymore. Something that is incomplete or that is causing them a pain, an emotional pain that maybe they've even suppressed it. They don't even pay attention to it anymore, but it's there because that's what's stopping them from really living a fully expressed life. Because when they can go, and this can be a really emotional and a very painful experience. However, it's something that has to be done because as long as people resist that stuff, it's going to persist. Whatever people run away from, they always run into. So what they need to do is they need to write down exactly what they want to create, exactly the ideal life they would love to live. How would they love to spend every day of their life? Where would they like to wake up? You know, what would they like to do? You know, what kind of car would they like to drive? You know, what home would they like to own? Where would they like to go on holiday? And then they go to the next step. It's like, okay, what do I need to heal in my life in order to allow myself to express myself in the most powerful way possible? Because until they do that, they're always going to have some level of resistance, either unconsciously or consciously, and that's always going to prevent them from living fully self-expressed. And you can't be fully self-expressed if you're resisting something or if you've not completed something or you haven't healed something. And ultimately, I always tell people, it always starts initially, usually for most people, 99% of people, it's their relationship with one of their parents or both of their parents.
Yeah, thank you very much for this recommendation. It's so true. And I even find that you can do this every year and you can do this exercise.
Of course.
The first thing that comes to mind is immediately after we've finished this interview, I'm going to do it again.
And then I would add one third thing, right?
Yeah.
Because once people have written down what they need to heal or what's incomplete, you know, which relationships have, you know, are still need to be healed or whatever it is, or, you know, it could be something that with somebody who's passed away, what they need to do then is they then need to complete those things. They need to heal those things. And so if somebody's still alive, they need to pick up the phone and say, listen, Dad, you know, I've been wanting to tell you that I'm sorry. We haven't spoken for 4 or 5 years, and I love you, and I just want to say that I miss you and I love you, and I think what happened in the past is past, and I just wanted to say I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. If somebody has passed away, they can still do the same thing in the form of a letter, writing a letter to that person, and then they can burn that letter, and that's a very powerful, energetic experience that releases any trapped energy in their nervous system. And people say, well, gosh, I haven't spoken to my mom or my dad or whatever it is, the other person for 10, 15, 20 years. All the more reason to do it.
Absolutely.
All the more reason to do it, because there's nothing worse than, you know, you're one of your, somebody that you loved or somebody that you had a great relationship with or something in your life that you haven't healed and you haven't had the opportunity to complete that, you know? Yeah. So that's it, definitely important. And I do this. I mean, I tell people this all the time, and I just did a talk recently here in London, and I told the audience to do exactly the same thing. And one person in the audience phoned his father directly after that and healed a relationship with his father that had been festering for many years, where they hadn't spoken to each other for many years. And it's changed his entire life. He's become a different person in the space of 72 hours, you know? So
even one of the things, my first boyfriend ended in a really nasty situation, and I closed the door to that, and I never reached out to him for 8 years, and it has been bothering all the relationships I built since that.
Yes.
Up to the point that I sent him a letter, and I'd been writing these letters for years, but now I actually sent it to him. And in the first line, I said, I'm not sure if you need to respond. I'm not sure if you need to do anything with this, but it's important for me to write it to you and to reach out. And he actually responded. And that was wow. So healing to do.
Beautiful. That's amazing. That's awesome. And, you know, and people, anyone listening to this who has this kind of, you know, issue at play in their life, that maybe have been suppressed for a while and maybe now is coming to the surface. It's a scary thing to do. I know, because I had to do it myself. You know, I had a terrible relationship with my father when I was young. And then one day I picked up the phone in 1994. I was in the middle of a landmark forum workshop. It was the second day. And I went out to a phone box and I didn't even have the money to call. I just phoned reverse charges. And my father picked up the phone and I said, Dad, it's Alan. I hadn't even spoken to my parents for about 6 months at the time, because I never used to speak to them regularly. And I just said, listen, don't say anything. I just want to tell you, I'm sorry. I love you. I've been making you wrong for so many years and blaming you for the fact that, you know, I didn't have a happy childhood. And I said, I can see how that has affected our relationship. And I just want to tell you, I love you so much. I'd love for us to be, you know, have a great relationship from this day forward. And I hope you can forgive me. And we had an amazing 90-minute conversation. We both ended up in tears. And from that day forward, we became the best of friends, you know, until the day he passed away. And I would give anything for another day with him, because he was such an amazing man. But it only occurred to me much later on in my life that he was such a great man. And the older I got, the wiser he got, you know, I realized how wise he was, you know, but it takes courage to be able to do that, to pick up the phone or to write a letter. But it, as you said, it's such a healing thing, and it's not about blaming the other person.
Nothing.
It's always just about saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me. I miss you. I just want to say I love you. And can we just start again? You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so often, especially when it comes to our parents, we forget that they are people too.
Yes.
And that they have a situation going on for themselves. And now, now that I'm a mother, over the past 10 years, I've started to realize how the love from parents is really unconditional.
Yes.
I never understood unconditional love until I had children. I don't care what they do in their life. I will always love them.
Well, that's an interesting point, because when we are young, unfortunately, most people are unconscious and there's no handbook for being a parent, right?
No.
So we do learn that love is conditional when we're young, because when we're good, then we get praised. When we're not good, it feels like the love is being retracted, but it's not true.
No.
That's our perception when we're young, because we have a very immature mind and we don't know how to process. But it's only later on we learn that our parents loved us through thick and thin, and they were just doing the best they could.
Yes.
And people might be thinking now, anyone listening to this might be thinking, well, what has this got to do with money, right? Everything.
Everything.
Because it's all about energy. And money is energy, and energy flows or it's blocked. And when you have blocks in your life, when you have unconscious resistance and you have a block in your life, you are blocking the flow of energy, and money can't flow to you and you can't flow into the world in a powerful way.
Absolutely. Removing my money blocks has brought me into a happy marriage. And,
awesome.
And I thought I had to remove some kind of a relationship blocks. No, I had to remove the money blocks.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's lovely to see you again, Suze. It's been a long time.
Lovely to see you again, Alan. Thank you very much for this. And Listeners, please go ahead and do what Alan says. Take out a piece of pen and paper immediately after this call and start this. And if you ever want to reach out to Alan, go to any Tony Robbins training. He will be there somewhere near the stage. Just say hi, tell him you listened to this interview, and leave a comment below if there's anything that really touched you. We would love to hear.
And Suze, if anybody wants to connect with me, they can find me on Facebook. I'm easy to find. And regarding being near the stage, I'll be near the production stage at the back of the room, not near the front.
Oh, yeah. So you're actually better off if you don't have the VIP tickets.
Yeah. Although I'm always walking around, you know, I hope to see you soon too.
Yes, you will. We'll
see. It's been a year.
It's been almost a year. No, I'm coming to London for you, not for Tony this time.
Yeah. Thank you, my dear. I'm doing a workshop in August here in London, a 2.5-day workshop in August. So if you're around, you know, I'll be happy to tell you about it. It's actually called The Way Back to Love. So.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to check the dates. I'm going to stop the recording now first, because for our listeners, I think this was it. Thank you very much for listening, and see you next week on the next interview. Bye.
Thank you for having me, Suze.